This is Take Care, covering health and wellness, this time with a look at aging. I'm Jason Smith.
And I'm Catherine Loper. For our latest in health segment, we're bringing you two pieces of news that could make living into your golden years easier.
When you think of technology, you may not immediately think of our older citizens. But it turns out that some of the latest gadgets in your home, smart or not, are being embraced by seniors as they find new ways to live independently.
As people are living longer, they're embracing their wellness and they're really open to using new and emerging tools to support their independence and wellness. And in that gap has emerged a whole variety of new technology that can be applied as tools to help people live well.
That's Kari Olson, Chief Innovation and Technology Officer at Front Porch. We spoke to her about new tech and how it could impact the way older people live.
You might not see every senior citizen out there sporting an Apple Watch or vigorously tapping out a text message with one hand, but Olson says there is technology available today which can overcome that.
Right now, I think one of the first opportunities in the home is to create what I call an engagement platform. And there we're seeing a lot of new voice-first applications like Alexa, Google Home, in combination with smart home technology, which gives an older adult the ability to control things with their voice. Things like lights, curtains, TVs, telephones, variety of things with the voice. The voice is the first and easiest way for older adults to engage in the digital world, especially if they don't have comfort with computers or tablets or smartphones. And this can be incredibly empowering.
While a lot of the technology is advanced, some of the newer devices solve simple problems, like not being able to control a thermostat.
And we've had people tell us, gosh, this is the first time I've been able to do this in years because I wasn't able to see my thermostat before to control it. The ability to turn on lights when people get up at night is a huge way to reduce falls and keep people safe as they move around their homes.
Olson also says wearable devices like Fitbits are helpful when it comes to monitoring and managing chronic conditions, which many older individuals suffer from.
All of these allow people to do it on their terms, in their way, in the convenience of their own home.
When I think about my own home, I wouldn't necessarily consider it smart, and that's something we brought up with Olson. For a lot of seniors, aging in place means aging in their own homes, which were likely built years before these devices became part of everyday life.
First of all, smart home technology can be adapted into older home environments, and that's a real plus. Same with the voice first technology, provided that we make sure that older adults have access to affordable broadband services. That's really key, and that we're able to build Wi-Fi networks in the home because a lot of this technology is Wi-Fi enabled. So by that very fact, it means that we have to create support services for adopting these technologies, whether that's through loved ones or community organizations. In order for this to really take place, we need both the technology and the support.
And that brings us to the question of design and usability. What changes can be made to make these apps and technologies user-friendly?
We have to keep the user interface simple. We have to keep the instructions readily available to remind people how to use it when they need it. But most importantly, we have to design these solutions with older adults, not for older adults. And that's a piece that's kind of still evolving. I would say more and more entrepreneurs are reaching out to us, for example, in the 5,000 lives that we work with every day and asking for our input and our residents' input on how to design these technologies. And that gives me hope. Awareness that designing with is a critically important piece to be successful in this space.
As you'd expect, there are more changes coming to independent living in the future. Olson described one such project, a self-driving car called Voyage, still in the pilot stage, that will provide a taxi service for residents of one Florida community.
Another area that excites me is the emergence of social robotics. New solutions like LEQ from Intuition Robotics is expected to hit the market next year. So think of Alexa, but in this case, asking questions and engaging the older adult, reminding them and understanding and learning about their habits and creating a supportive environment through voice and engaging and bringing the digital world to the older adult.
But it's not just your home, condo, or nursing home that you have to take into account when you reach retirement. It's also your community.
In some cases, your community could be one that's built with seniors in mind, with single-story buildings, ample sidewalk space, and areas to gather with family and friends. But in other cases, your community of sorts could be a major city.
In Pittsburgh, a dedicated group of leaders is trying to make changes to their city to allow the older population the same privileges younger residents have.
Laura Poskin is director of Age Friendly Greater Pittsburgh, an initiative of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Partnership for Aging. She joins us to talk about the Age Friendly movement and changes being made in and around the city where she works and lives. Pittsburgh is just one community of hundreds across the country making up the AARP network of Age Friendly states and communities. Thanks for joining us, Laura.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, what makes a city age friendly?
I would say an age-friendly city is one that is inclusive and respectful of all ages. So the age-friendly movement was started by the World Health Organization. In the United States, it's run by AARP, and they use a framework that includes the built environment and the social environment. So you really have to think about both. You know, does the sidewalk work for someone who is 5 years old? And does it work for an 85-year-old neighbor? These things in our environment and in our community should be good for everyone. And that's really at the heart of Age Friendly.
And you work specifically in the greater Pittsburgh area. Can you tell us a bit about the aim of your work there?
Sure. So I work in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. So we are really interested in working with a lot of different partners. You know, I'm a gerontologist. So a lot of times when I'm in meetings kind of in the aging space. We're really interested in working with our city officials, with people in the county. A big focus of our work is on mobility, thinking about, you know, pedestrian safety. But then we've also been really excited about forming better intergenerational dialogue. A lot of work needs to be done connecting generations, making people feel connected to their neighbors. And that's a big focus of our work.
Was there anything about Pittsburgh and the surrounding area that made it an obvious candidate to focus on making it age friendly?
Well, we have a large older adult population. For a long time, we were leading in the country in the number of older adults that we have. But I think now we're like a lot of cities, and I think it's 17% of our population are people 65 and older, and that's only going to grow. But I think there's this divide between longtime residents, and we use the word newcomers a lot, and just this need to get them talking and get them on the same page and understand that we're better when we're working together and when we understand each other.
So Pittsburgh itself is an older, established city. The infrastructure, the housing, a lot of it has been there for a long time. Specifically, what kind of changes need to be made to make it more age-friendly?
Oh, my goodness. You're so right. You're so right when you say that. We are an older city. I always kind of think about, like, our sidewalks, because these are sidewalks that were built a long time ago. We have people that use power wheelchairs. We have people who are pushing strollers. We have people who all need to utilize this infrastructure and really can't. So we've had some success working with the city's Department of Mobility and Infrastructure, and along with a lot of community groups, to make some changes, like specific changes at one intersection that I'm thinking about. We did this public demonstration that was, it was so fun. We call them the crossings. So we came together for this really cool, fun celebration, and we met some older residents there, and one of them pulled me aside and said, you know, I've lived in this affordable high rise for 5.5 years, and I have never once attempted to cross the street. In the gerontology realm, we talk a lot about wanting to help people age in place. We don't mean sitting in front of your TV and watching the news. We mean you being able to be a part of your community your whole life. The woman that I met that day, I said, okay, Rose, we're going to cross the street today. And we did. And after that, you know, it was a great celebration, but then it was kind of like, okay, now what? We've really got to change things. And since then, they have installed no turn on red signs, create wider curb cuts that had those yellow truncated domes that you see. And that's really for people with visual impairment. So making those wider. It's a lot of things that are kind of thought of as complete streets
Yeah, well, small changes like that, or even bigger ones, or making changes like that across the whole city, comes at a cost. Is it economically advantageous to make those kind of age-friendly choices and changes?
Oh, absolutely. So I think this is good. It's a right decision and it's a smart decision because the city's interests are really serving people of all ages. People of all ages have money to spend, but we know that older adults are typically about 50% of the spending that happens, you know, and that doesn't include healthcare costs. They are just able to be part of the economy and we want them to be.
So you've talked a little bit about some of the changes that have been made so far, but what kind of changes do you hope to see in the future to, you know, keep making the city more age-friendly?
Well, I think that transportation and housing are two huge topics. We've been, you know, working with our Port Authority to train new bus operators so that they're thinking in a more age-friendly way, so that they are more welcoming to people of all ages who ride their bus. There need to be more options, like the transportation system should be better and more affordable for people. There should be different options for people. The same goes for housing. I mean, they're two huge topics. And, you know, the plan that we created was for 3 years. So we were intentional about knowing what we could accomplish in 3 years. But I think being at the table and talking to decision makers who are able to decide, you know, how the budget is allocated and really thinking about making sure that people of all ages are able to have options throughout their life, that's what we're really advocating for in the long run. The challenges that we have now are new, and so the hope is that we adapt to those with our infrastructure and with our opportunities for people so that they can really be a part of their community their whole life.
Laura Poskin is director of Age Friendly Greater Pittsburgh, an initiative of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Partnership for Aging.